Blog Talk Radio.
Shalom, this is Richard Address, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome you again to today's installment of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio. These shows represent our desire to explore issues and events that help shape and comment on the current revolution in longevity and how that revolution is impacting our families, ourselves, and our Jewish world at large. And we invite you to share your comments and ideas with us at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com or on our Jewish Sacred Aging Radio Facebook page. And our first segment today, we're going to look at a brand new book called The Resilient Couple, authored by Drs. Lynn and Phil Levy. Due to scheduling issues, we recorded this conversation a couple of days ago. And so with the graciousness of our producer, Steve, we're going to call them up on the magic of technology and introduce Lynn and Phil Levy and their book, The Resilient Couple. We welcome to our microphones here on today's edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio, Lynn and Phil Levy, PhDs both, twin PhDs. That's pretty cool. The author of a brand new book called The Resilient Couple, subtitled Navigating Together Through Life. So, Phil, Lynn, welcome to Jewish Sacred Aging Radio. How are you doing today?
Thank you. We are doing very well, I think.
Great.
Couldn't be better.
Happy to be with you.
Way to go. Way to go. Very positive. Anyway, The Resilient Couple, brand new book. First of all, this talks about some issues, a major issue in your own life, in your own marriage. This tsunami, which we'll talk about in a couple of seconds. It's really designed for couples and I think really also individuals, too, who deal with some traumatic issue in their life and how resilience plays a part of it. If somebody wants to get a hold of this book, is it Amazon? Is it bookstores and both? Or how do they do that?
Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com are the two major purveyors of the book.
So you wrote this book in the beginning as you introduced the book to the reader to talk about with couples with something that you write, quote, what went wrong.
Right.
What does that mean? What is that? Because it covers a wide variety of possible issues. What was the genesis of this book?
I think what it is it's not only what went wrong, but I think that's sort of defines things that are unexpected. And at different stages of life, we have expectations and anticipation, and sometimes the reality turns out to be different. And as a couple, we have to cope with that. And if we become a resilient couple, we are much more successful at adapting.
Right. The impetus, as you say, for the book was a personal experience we had as a couple that sort of shattered the roots of our lives. And we took the opportunity once we had a little hindsight on what was occurring in our life and the changes that we would have to make and shifts that we would have to make in our lives to evaluate how we as a couple navigated through this time that could have really taken us apart or severed the closeness and really wound up feeling closer to one another. And we thought that it was an important aspect of relationships to explore together and that other people might benefit from it.
And there are specific things that couples can do to weather the storm so that the tsunami gets downgraded rather than becoming overwhelming.
You talk about, I mean, obviously the title of the book is The Resilient Couple, and we read a lot about resilience now. You defined it you lived this. Okay, something happened in your life, changed your entire life. We'll get to that. That's the tsunami. But you say that it was because of this sense of resilience. How do you define it? How do you guys define the sense of resilience?
I think the resilience really can be it means being able to adapt, being able to take whatever is kind of thrown at you, and being able to say, wait, I have certain resources that I have adapted through life that, or through my experiences that are applicable in this situation. And I can sort of adapt it to this new environment.
To be resilient, first and foremost, you need to have an awareness of what is really going on. And as a couple, having a consensus on what it is, what your options are, so that you can identify together positive actions that will help you to move forward in a constructive way as a couple.
So you write about this tsunami that hit you all of a sudden.
And, right.
In some of the workshops we do at Jewish Sacred Aging, we talk a lot about the ability to adapt to the randomness of life, things that come up that you just, you just don't expect, and all of a sudden it's there. This is what happened to you. There was an event. I don't know whether you want to share that or not, but there was an event that really shifted the ground of your life and your relationship and presented you with stark real choices. How are we going to deal with this? Talk to me about the initial reaction to this event. What was going through your mind? I know you allude to the Kubler-Ross stages of grief a lot in the book, but if you can think back to those several years ago when this occurred, what was the initial reaction? Fear, anger, all of the above?
All of the above. Panic, fear, anger, frustration, a certain level of impotence that, there was nothing really to do but sort of accept it and find a new pathway. The remarkable thing about this experience was that while we were both involved, the experience was primarily Phil's experience, but as a couple, you experience everything together. And of course, you come at it from your own unique perspectives of your own lives, of the lives that you have lived, and how you interpret, the world around you. So at times our interpretations were extremely different, and we had to figure out a way to take those differences and our different world views and make it work for us in some way. And I think, you're so involved in sacred aging, and I think this is probably an aspect of sacred aging in that we all find ourselves, loss is something that is not unique to people at any life stage. But, Phil and I are at a life stage where, we find ourselves where we're aging, and there was a need to sort of explore how to become our own caring community.
Right. And the initial reaction, the idea of loss, and this event really made you lose the ground, the stability. But also talk to me, because this happens to people, they'll get a horrible diagnosis of a disease, or some other event in their lives, which will restructure even how their social group or social network or support reacts to them. Did you have that experience? You allude to it a little bit in the book, but what was that reaction after those first several months when this, became public and your lives are changed? Was there a redistribution of friends or support?
Well, I think what happened was, when you talk about it, it really is about loss.
Mm-hmm.
It's a loss of predictability. It's a loss of reliability. It's a loss of security. There's a loss of community. And most importantly, there's a feeling of loss of control, all of which creates a sense of fear. That's the initial feeling. And part of what happens is you realize who in your life you can really count on and in what way, because different people can be wonderful supports in different way. Not everybody will do it in the same way. So, you know, our family was remarkable in terms of their sensitivity, their caring, but we also had to be aware that this impacted them.
Right.
Because as whatever impacts me impacts Lynn, whatever impacts Lynn impacts me, whatever impacts us impacts our children, our grandchildren. And there were many friends who were involved in my life that were impacted by this. So, but what was remarkable, I think, is to a person, our family just stood tall and strong together, and we did pull together. We shared, we supported. There were certain friends who were just incredibly wonderful. Were there some people who were somewhat disappointing? There always are. But for the most part, people really did come through. But there was a transition here and a change, and we had to, you know, reinvent ourselves. I had to as an individual. We had to reinvent ourselves as a couple and create, you know, to ensure that we had this caring community that Lynn referred to, which is critical, I think, to a feeling of resilience and safety and security.
When you talk about caring community, are you talking about your own family system or just the dyad of you, the two of you?
No, I think the larger system, you know, when we look at the coupledom, it's two people. But then, of course, it's like two people standing under the chuppah. The chuppah is open on all sides because we, you know, understand that the community is critical to the success of the couple.
Mm-hmm.
This goes back to my premarital education program, but it's a factor. And without the support of those people surrounding us, it would have been much more difficult to navigate. You know, we talk about navigating, and I think there were days when we navigated much better than we did on other days.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure. Go ahead, Phil.
I think one of the things is that, you know, we talked about the Jewish spirituality and the chuppah Lynn talked about and that sense of community. You know, the Shiva for me has always been something incredible in the Jewish religion and how people come together and help the person who has lost. Well, I think in some ways, you know, this was, you know, a loss to us. It felt like almost a death of our lives as we knew it, a death of certain dreams and expectations and promises. And part of it was then after we had the support and we got through this, and most importantly, the support of one another and our family, but also friends and other people in the community, there was, the recreation of new dreams.
Right.
And so we reinvented ourselves. I did as an individual, but, you know, with Lynn's support, but also we reinvented ourselves as a couple. Because so much of my work was inextricably connected to every other aspect of our lives. And, you know, the tsunami was that there was no time for preparation. You know, on 1 minute's notice, there was this disagreement and it was over. That there was no preparation for that.
Yeah, 41-year career.
In one place.
In one place.
With commitments going forward.
But the unique thing was, you know, when we talk about the tsunami, there were days when we felt individually and as a couple completely at sea, without oars. You know, our lives had been so stable, not that we hadn't experienced the usual losses that people do in their lives, but nothing unexpected where we felt that, you know, we needed to kind of reconstitute in some way.
We had remarkable stability in our lives, remarkable predictability, which was very unusual. Being in one place and growing it from 3 employees to 5,600 employees, you know, it was a remarkable experience, and it created a sense of family and community there, and our family and friends became involved in that. So what we had to do is recreate this community for ourselves, and that's what we did.
Right. We're talking with Lynn and Phil Levy, the authors of a new book called The Resilient Couple, subtitled Navigating Together Through Life, and really a story, a personal journey story about how you deal with the randomness of loss, a sudden loss, a shift, in this case, in a professional life, in a business. But I think one of the reasons why this resonates and should resonate with many people is because in variations on a theme, what happened to you is happening to other people in not only in corporate America, but in nonprofit America, and even in religious institutions where, you know, long-serving clergy will be confronted all of a sudden with shifts in the culture or the change in the community and said, you know, you're done. This is not isolated. And I think this is one of the reasons why people should, you know, get a hold of this and take a look at it. And as you mentioned before, The Resilient Couple is available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Both of you have psychological training. You know, you're therapists. You come from that background. Let me ask you a question, because it really, as I'm reading through the book, this occurred to me that the loss of one's professional identity, how much does that impact the loss of one's own sense of self?
Well, it depends on how much of your sense of self is based upon your professional identity. Mine was. So it threatened that, but frankly, I was able to overcome that because with the support of my caring community, included not only Lynn, but also certain friends, I had new opportunities fairly quickly, and I was able to rebuild and reinvent myself in a way that I was able to maintain that professional identity, which is so important to my sense of self. But, you know, I think that, you know, I think you're right. People today are experiencing disruption
right. At
alarming rates. And how they respond to that as individuals and as couples and as families very much determines the stability of our society. And, you know, I think what our message was is that people can, by having the awareness of what they're experiencing, by owning it, by coming together as a couple and some skills that we talk about, and you mentioned RED, which I think is very important. It's an acronym that's, you know, respect, empathy, and dialogue. What we found is that most important, people, we needed to empathize with one another, as well as with other people who are impacted by this, especially our children.
And to respect each other's unique perspectives, that we didn't experience it in exactly the same way. And we needed to be able to in from the other what how each of us was experiencing this event that, you know, while it happened to Phil, it was so much a part of who we were. And you can't separate yourself. And, you know, the unique aspect of this was that this replicated in some way, you know, it was a trigger for me because this occurred, you know, with Phil when he turned 60. And my father actually had a career, a devastating experience in his own career at 60. And so, you know, one has to be very much aware of what their own triggers are so that it doesn't spill over into the event that's taking place in the present tense.
And sometimes you need professional help to understand what your triggers are if you're not aware of them.
Right.
You know, as Lynn said about her father, my father lost his career when he was 54 years of age. And yet what I realized is, in spite of my loss and the pain, Lynn was devastated by this because it created a feeling of fear and insecurity for her. So I needed to reassure her while she was also supporting and reassuring me. And different things trigger different things in us. Sometimes I was fine, and other times she was fine. And we lend, you know, you lend that ego, you lend that strength to one another.
Right.
And that's really important as a couple.
And that's, you know, that's the empathy part, you know, to really be able to empathize with your partner. Your partner isn't just a person sharing space with you, but it's a real live human being and with whom you have gone through a myriad of tribulations and wonderful with, and not to lose sight of that.
And one of the things we talk about is to always go back to those earlier experiences.
Yes.
And to call upon them at a time like this, and to remind yourself of the happiness you had, and to use the strength from earlier times in your life when you overcame challenges individually and as a couple, so that you can truly believe we will be fine, we will survive this, and we will come out of it even stronger and better.
And to, we talk about the story of us. Phil and I have a very unique story of how we met. But it's interesting, we do revisit that story because for us, how we met is who we are. Two very different people under ordinary and extraordinary circumstances who came together and found shared values. And other than that, we shared nothing. We had nothing.
True. We always said, you know, I love going to a ball game and Lynn loved going to the opera.
Right.
But, you know, and in every way that reflected who we were, except our shared values. And we write the book, by the way, from the perspective of he said, she said, we said, because it's important for couples to understand that they experience things differently. So my experience of the same situation was different than Lynn's, but how do we get to the we? How do we get to the consensus of the we said, where we can agree on how we as a couple are experiencing this, what we might best do to adapt to it so that we can bounce forward, which I think in many ways is the definition we use of resilience, is the ability to bounce forward together as a couple.
Yeah, I think the last part of your RED formula of respect, empathy, and dialogue, the way you've structured the book of the back and forth, in essence, a dialogue between the two of you,
right.
You know, gives credence to your own personal journey in that, and you even write about the Campari and Manischewitz dialogue of when you met, which was kind of cute. Although on the cover of the book, you, if I'm looking at, you only have the Campari. I guess the Manischewitz got lost
Elbow. This was a very spontaneous thing. Whereas a couple, we were somewhere together on vacation, and I saw this, and I said, "This is perfect." And
this bucolic scene.
I set up some chairs. I said, "Do you have Campari?" And they said, "Yes." And we did it, and we just had someone take the picture. And Lynn said, "This is ridiculous." I said, "No, no, this is who we are. You know, we are that Campari
couple."
We're
ridiculous.
Yeah. And it was fun-loving.
It was.
And that's part of what, you know, while this was challenging, you know, we are very fortunate in how we came out of this. And I don't think it's by chance. And I think other couples can learn from it and can sustain themselves. And that's the key, to sustain oneself as a couple, not just as individuals, when you experience, you know, the unexpected.
You write about a significant amount towards the end of the book about resilient relationships, trying to, I guess, extrapolate your own experience into some advice for, you know, in building relationships. And then you also allude to in the body of the book, again, going back to this idea of resilience. I wanted to ask you about this. You sort of like mention that people are born with this, I guess, resilience. What do you mean by it? Is everybody, in your opinion, born with the ability to bounce forward?
I think that there is capacity. So when we say that, we're talking about capacity. But the truth is that resilience can be learned, and we can borrow resilience. You know, when we've been asked by people, well, what if my wife is resilient and I'm not particularly resilient? And the truth is that sometimes you can borrow from someone's resilience and learn from it. When you work with couples, one of the things, you know, that you identify in the beginning of couples work is who might be the likeliest person in the couple to be able to change on any given subject. And part of that is that individual slightly more resilient than the other partner?
In that way.
So I think it can go back and forth. And, you know, we also say both individuals don't have to be equally resilient. I can be more resilient in one way and Phil in another. But we borrow, if the relationship is working, we borrow and take in from one another, and we share our resilience.
Just pursuing this a little bit from your own personal experience and then your professional experience and your training, how much does one's family of origin have to do with the ability to be resilient?
Everything.
Very significantly so, because they are models for you. We're at a time of crisis, and Lynn and I both had similar, you know, experiences in terms of our fathers. How did they respond?
Right.
Were they resilient? And if they weren't, what can we do to be different than they were? Because frankly, neither of our fathers really were as resilient, you know, in response to their tsunamis as we were able to be. And I think one of the reasons for that is, you know, people evolve, is the support we provided to one another. And, you know, I think, again, it goes back to that, you know, when you asked about resilience, you know, everybody has different degree, but it can be strengthened.
Right.
And it can be enhanced, as Lynn said. And that's the important thing. It's not, are you resilient or you're not resilient? It's a continuum. And at any given issue and at any different moment, it will be different.
I want to go back to your question about families of origin. In facilitating my couples groups with the couples who were to be married, the first question I asked them, I had them do an exercise, and I asked them to pack a suitcase. And they look at me, you know, they looked at me with questioning eyes, and I said, pack a suitcase. Tell me what aspect of your parents' relationship you want to take with you and what aspects you want to leave behind. And the purpose of it is that in formulating their own unique relationships, I want to encourage them to emulate the best of what they saw.
You know, it's sort of like a question about genetics. You are born with certain genes, but those don't have to limit you. And if we have something we talk about in the book is the three A's to change. The first A is awareness. If you have awareness of certain kinds of things, then you can make changes. And a big part is to understand who your family was, who your role models were, how you perceive them, and how the family responded to challenges, and how do you want to do it perhaps in a different way.
Doesn't it take courage to change?
Oof.
It takes incredible courage.
And support.
And support from one another. It takes great strength. And it also takes faith. Both Lynn and I are people of faith. And we do believe that we will be able to make the changes that are necessary. But there are moments where it is very, very frightening.
I want to speak about the faith or spiritual aspect because, you know, not everybody listening to this today is connected in a way to their religion, you know, in a formal way,
right.
But I want to say that, you know, there's an aspect of spirituality in the loving relationship, and we create rituals together. And those rituals, whether it's as a couple or a family, create a spiritual foundation for the family, for the couple. And those are equally important. And can be sustaining factors when you are going through a tsunami of your own.
Or let me say this, you know, I work with couples a good deal, and one of the things I try to help them do is to develop rituals. Now, and it doesn't have to be about a tsunami, it can be just in any given day, you know, how you say good morning to someone else can impact how they experience their day, how you how you say welcome home when someone comes home, how you say goodnight to someone. Rituals are very, very important in a relationship. And some people don't have them. Some people don't have very functional ones. And those can be taught so that people can feel closer, more supportive, and then will feel more resilient as a couple.
We've been speaking with Lynn and Phil Levy, twin PhDs, authors of this new book, The Resilient Couple, Navigating Together Through Life, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And we have about a minute left in this segment, guys. So the last question, real easy. What did you learn from all this?
We learned to have faith in ourselves and each other.
We learned to listen to one another, to empathize with one another, and to overcome our differences, to never blame one another, to realize that it's not about winning as an individual, but it's about winning as a couple, and that we learn that we love each other in a very deep way and want to always support one another, and we were able to do so.
And to never stop talking.
Never stop dialoguing. That's a good Jewish trait. You know? Never stop talking.
That's true. That's true. The next question is, then what are you serving?
Never stop talking, never stop eating. Food is love. Absolutely.
Lynn and Phil, thank you very, very much for your time. Good luck with the book. And as you go around the country and talking about the book, continued success with your life. Say hello to the family for me and just take care of yourself. Have just continued success. Thank you for your time. And we'll be right back with our second segment today.
Turn your podcasting passion into profits. The book, The Business of Podcasting, describes the business side of podcasting, including how to become a professional podcaster. You'll learn about positioning your clients' expertise through podcasting, too, plus the best business models, how to find clients, and much more. Visit thebusinessofpodcasting.com.
Welcome back to our second segment here on today's edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio. And it is a great pleasure to welcome to the microphones Carrie Henley and Bruce Frankel. And we're going to be talking about this unbelievably exciting new caregiving summit, Age Without Borders, a global caregiving summit. Carrie, Bruce, welcome to Jewish Sacred Aging Radio. How y'all doing?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi Address. Such a pleasure to be here.
Hi, and Carrie, you're out in Colorado, I think.
I am. I am out in the snowy Rocky Mountains.
Well, we'll keep the snow there, and Bruce is up in the sacred city of Boston, correct?
Correct. I'm close. In the refrigerated area.
Well, welcome, and I know you're both coming out of or battling some whatever's going around the country right now. So I appreciate you being with us. First of all, let's talk about Age Without Borders. Carrie, you are the founder of Age Without Borders. What is it?
Oh, thank you so much. Age Without Borders, we're a boutique virtual events company. We have a team of 10, and our team all has various backgrounds and experience in this new world of positive aging, or looking at the longevity revolution and tapping into all the luminaries and thought leaders who are out there trying to help redefine what it means to be getting older. So we've been producing all sorts of events to bring and curate a global collection of voices to bring to the public in very simple video style interviews. So kind of like watching a Netflix series. And we decided this year, Bruce and I worked together on our first summit at the beginning of 2017, just a little over a year ago. And now we put this big caregiving summit together after discussing as a team how important caregiving is and how universal it is, no matter what age and stage of life or where you live in the world, taking care of somebody that you love is an aspect of life that will come often when you least expect it.
Well, I know that probably the number one workshop that Jewish Sacred Aging gets asked to do in congregations and organizations has to do with what we call the art of caregiving. And as you know, and as many of the people that you've talked to on the summit, this is really, I really think it's a brand new life stage, a stage that can last for years and years. And in some cases that I think all of us have come in contact with over a decade. What was the first summit in 17, a year ago? What was the focus of that?
So our first summit was essentially a global look at positive aging in mm-hmm. general. So we brought about 50 speakers from about 19 different countries to discuss what does it mean at 50 to 100? And how does it impact getting older if we want to take a look at our finances, about ageism as an internal form of discrimination, about housing? How is lifelong learning being addressed around the world in different countries? So we tackled a huge number of broad topics to give a big overview and introduction to this concept that, hey, as we're getting older here, we're healthier, we're living longer, and there are lots of opportunities to pivot and redesign our lives. And the world is getting smaller. With the power of the internet, we're able to bring together voices from, you know, some of the top thought leaders in Asia, where they're super aging, and how is Hong Kong and South Korea, and how are they managing their aging population? What's happening in Australia? What's happening in Central America and Brazil? So we found it was just so intriguing and interesting to learn some of the best practices around the world and then pull it together with our experience in journalism and storytelling in a format that's very informal. So it's not like going to a boring conference where someone's up at a lectern with their PowerPoint slides and you never get to talk to the speaker again. We bring their speakers to you, our viewers, in their homes or in their offices. It's much more casual, and we're very interested in not only hearing their expertise, but their personal stories. And go ahead, Bruce.
Well, I mean, two things that strike me about what you said, and it's been true for us, is first, the number of people from around the world who access the First Age Without Borders Summit. I think we had people from about 17 countries, and that really led us to see the value of including speakers, particularly for the caregiving summit, from around the country. So I think we have about speakers from about 17 or 18 countries on this summit. So you really get a panorama of views in different areas of caregiving, whether it's partnering as a caregiver or policy or innovation, you know, those segments of how we caregive and what we need to focus on. And, you know, I have to say that one of the revelations really of listening to the summit in its entirety and the speakers has been how similar the issues are for the most part. Some places, obviously, if they're income challenged or whatever, have slightly different areas. But, you know, there's something basic about caregiving that we need to attend to, and people face very similar issues around the world.
Well, Bruce is you're the host and managing editor of Age Without Borders. Let's really let people know, if someone wants to tap into this, it's over a week. It's January 20th to the 26th, and it's a series of presentations, video presentations, spread out over this time period. If I want to access this, how do I do that? Do I go to a website? Do I call up somebody? What do I do?
Yeah, you can go to www.agewithoutborders.com, and you'll be able to access it. We will also be posting on Facebook the Caregiving Summit for Age Without Borders, and there are links there, and on LinkedIn and Twitter. So we're trying to get the word out now, and it really is a pretty easy connection to make this week up until Friday. It's free. Every day someone can access that day of the Caregiving Summit for free. If someone wants to purchase the whole caregiving summit this week. It's $97, and then it goes up after that. But, you know, there's such volume of information. There are over 60 speakers, and I'll let Carrie speak a little about what else there is, a caregiving package. But
yeah, sure. Thank you, Bruce. Yeah, no, thanks, Bruce. The website address that Bruce provided is great. That goes to our company. And if you want to go straight to this caregiving summit, you go to awbcaregiving.com. And that stands for Age Without Borders. So awbcaregiving.com takes you to the website. You'll get to see a video from me explaining what the summit is and a few samples. All of our 60 speakers, we have about 35 hours of content. And why is it valuable? It's valuable for professionals in the industry. We have catered a whole track for professionals. So if you are working in the industry as a nurse, a CNA, a CEO in an aging business, you work in a retirement home, this content will help you level up on what is happening globally in caregiving from, you know, the policy level from the United Nations all the way down to how developing nations are managing caregiving. The fascinating conversations with folks like Frank van Dillen, who created the Hogevec Dementia Village in the Netherlands. It's one of the most revered models for dementia care. And we have a track for family and friends, which is for those of us who are taking care of our mom, our dad, our friend, our grandma, our grandpa. And we have lots of folks who are everyday folks, who are active caregivers, who became our artists or musicians or advocates, and they share their stories. And so the collection is something you can then own to share with your family or friends. If you're in the middle of caregiving now, you don't have time to watch it all, it's there for you. If you're on a budget and you want to just watch it through the week, that's great too. You have 48 hours to watch each of the days. And then if I may, just for one extra moment here, Rabbi addresses, to go over our care package. So caregiving was unique from our other summit, that our other summit was a lot of wonderful speakers and content. But we realized that when you are a caregiver, you are often exhausted, isolated, not taking care of yourself, facing experiences of burnout and loneliness, and we wanted to make sure we could address that as well. So we designed this huge free goodie bag, a digital goodie bag that we call your care package. And it's an entire website in and of itself that is an additional gift to the summit. And that section has tools and resources to replenish your soul, which was really something I was excited to talk to you about, Rabbi Address. I know this is something you speak about, the rituals that were discussed earlier by the couple right before us. So our care package has sections to revitalize your spirit. So we have a poetry section. I'm going to let Bruce speak about in a moment, curating extraordinary poets. We have music. We have art, inspiration, recipes, specific caregiving tips, stretching and exercise. So we put in there all these really wonderful, very short videos with some tips and tools that you can use to replenish yourself. So Bruce, maybe you can highlight a couple of the extraordinary poets that you brought in and what a gift it is to actually hear a professional poet read their piece on caregiving.
Well, thanks, Carrie. So I think one of the things that we saw as we did the interviews with all these both experts and family caregivers is when all is said and done, there's also a moment in which art goes more deeply than anything else. And in a short poem of 14 or 18 lines can sometimes penetrate more deeply than listening for, you know, for other things. So we have Vijay Seshadri, who is a Pulitzer Prize winning poet, reading a couple of his caregiving poems from his experience of caregiving for his parents and driving like 16 hours each way between New York and Pittsburgh to do it. We have caregiving poetry by Marie Howe, who was the New York State poet laureate, whose brother had AIDS a number of years ago, and she wrote the most extraordinary book of caregiving poems. Those are some of the voices that people can listen to. But there are also all sorts of other things that people can get in that caregiving package, whether it's coloring pages to have some enjoyable time with the person that they're caregiving with. You know, there are just music, but there are all sorts of value in that page. In that.
I just want to
reiterate, it's awb.caregiving.com. So anyway, sorry.
No. So the caregiving kit that's part of the summit, does one, is that cost? Is it free? And even so, how does one order that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. So it is free, and I'm just going to correct Bruce one more time. He's sick and jet lagging, but it's just AWB Caregiving, awbcaregiving.com. And when you go there, you'll see our website is beautiful and colorful, and you are able to sign up for the free pass, and that's how you get the keys to the kingdom. The 20th of January is when this whole site will be opening. Our team has been working on this for about 7 months, curating this content and putting together a beautiful, well-organized website that makes it so easy for you. You'll be able to go in and you can pick and choose the speakers that you want to listen to. And the speaker sessions are about 20 minutes long, but we also made a 2-minute trailer video for every single speaker. So you can just get a quick kind of commercial hit of what that session is about in 2 minutes, and then decide which ones you'd like to carry on and watch. Then you click on that care package, and it's all laid out for you with these beautiful graphics. You can pick and choose if you want to start in that poetry section and go poke around, start in the music. There's playlists you can download. All of, for those of you who are podcast listeners, all of our speaker sessions are audio downloadable as well. So you can download the collection of the speaker sessions. If you don't prefer to watch them, you can load them up and then listen to them in your car. You know, we're big believers in this beautiful power of pulling a global community together, and we can all be home because nobody can afford to go to conferences anymore. They're expensive, and you have to pay for your flights and your food, and then you're away from your family and the hotels, and you really don't have access to the speakers anyway. So our concept was, how can we totally reinvent what a conference means and make this a global conference so that you can listen, you can have access to these experts from Tasmania and Nicaragua and Brazil and all of the United States and Canada, right in your bedroom or your couch, and you can share it with your mother or your brother. If you're family caregiving, you can sit down together and watch a few of these very important videos that will teach you resources you would have never known about. It's very hard to find resources when you're in the middle of taking care of a crisis. So we lay out all kinds of things that can help you family plan, be an advocate, hear stories to make you feel like you're not alone. And we feel like that's the greatest contribution we can make to bringing, as you had said, caregiving as a stage of life. And as Raj Mehta had said, one of our speakers who created something called the Atlas of Caregiving, caregiving is an ongoing part of life, that you may have a child that you're caregiving for their entire life. You may, as a young millennial, be taking care of your grandparents. So while it feels like caregiving often is linked with the aging, and it certainly is, it's really about life.
No, then those of us who've walked this walk know, and certainly every clergy person knows, that this is not age distinctive. We're speaking with Carrie Henley, the founder of Age Without Borders, and Bruce Frankel, the host and managing editor of Age Without Borders, and we're discussing this upcoming global summit on caregiving, January 20th to 26th, accessible on the internet through agewithoutborders.com or awbcaregiving.com. A question: suppose I'm listening to this, and I'm particularly intrigued with one particular speaker. Their 20-minute session is over, and if I want to contact this speaker, if I want to follow up on something, or I have a question, or if I want to get some contact, how do I do that? Or do they just disappear into the hyperspace? How is that possible?
Yeah. Such a great question, Rabbi, because that, you know, go ahead, Bruce, but, you know, people do find that when they go to a conference. You try to chase that speaker down the hallway to say hi or give them a card if you're lucky, but we've done a whole bunch more setting up our pages. So go ahead, Bruce.
So I was just going to say that each speaker has their own distinct page that has their articles, resources, books, addresses, whatever they have wished to provide of their contact information. So every speaker will, of the 60-plus speakers, you could go to their page after you listen. There will be a link on the page where you, so you can open it up and go to the page and have all the resources available. So whether that's your own rabbi address, which will have your resources, or anybody else. So there's a lot of information to glean by anyone.
And,
real quick, we also have a Facebook page. Everybody can go to Age Without Borders on Facebook. We are very interested in hearing all of your voices. So we're inviting all of our participants to get on our Facebook page, and we'll be on Facebook Live all week from the 20th through the 26th. So all the speakers that are set up on each particular day are invited to come on with me live on Facebook, and that way all of you who are listening can ask questions of our speakers in real time, and they can get into a dialogue. And then we also are passing questions on to our speakers who may not be on at that particular time. So we're gathering all of your questions to give to the speakers. And yes, every speaker has all sorts of resources. You can get their books. Some have free gifts for you, and their contact social media information.
If there's a, is there a, when you go on the website, when you go on the awbcaregiving.com or agewithoutborders.com, is there a schedule? So if I particularly want to see Dr. So-and-so, and it's he's coming on or she's coming on a Friday afternoon at 3:00, is that listed there so I can, you know, get that schedule? Is that on the website?
So it's a great question, and one of the beautiful things about a virtual conference is that once we open up the doors, you can watch any of the speaker sessions on each day at your leisure. We have so many time zones that we are accommodating. One of my speaker interviews was from me here in Colorado to Bangalore, India. There's 8,500 miles between us and a 23-hour time zone difference, just about. So we decided, instead of making it a certain time, you can just watch whatever you want. So with your free pass, once day one is open, there are about 8 speaker sessions that you can pick and choose in our professional track and our friends and family track. You don't have to wait for a certain time of day. You can watch it at any time. And that just makes it so much easier for everybody. We don't want to force everyone to have to rearrange their schedules in order to catch our content.
And we posted a preview and a link on JewishSacredAging.com. If you go to our website on the right-hand side, you'll see the logo and Carrie and a little bit of introduction on JewishSacredAging.com. And Carrie, real fast, give me the websites. Give me the timing in case somebody, you know, when somebody says, okay, I want to get involved with this. How do I do that?
That's great. So just grab your pencil, awbcaregiving.com. That's awbcaregiving.com. And hop in there. You'll see where it asks you to register for your free pass. So click, grab your free pass. You will get emails sent directly to you from us. You have an option to purchase the entire collection so you can have it. Our early bird pre-registration cheapest price is $97. During the conference, it's $147. You cannot get 35 hours of content and 60 speakers for that price anywhere. We made it super affordable, and all of that care package content comes with it. So that's what you do. We will be opening the doors at 9 a.m. Mountain Time on January 20th, and we'll be running it all the way through the 26th. If you get that free pass, just know that we're giving you 48 hours for each day. So there's plenty of time to watch each of those days' links, and then if you purchase the content, it is yours forever. It's a lifetime access to the care package of the poetry and the music and the coloring pages, as well as all of our speaker sessions and their resources.
And but I can go on, just to make people, it's clear, if I want to just attend the conference and listen, that's free, correct?
That is free. You can click and get your free pass. Yep.
And the free pass is through awbcaregiving.com, correct?
That is right. You'll see big red buttons that you click there, and then we will email you every day your links for your free pass. We're calling
now,
it a master's degree in caregiving.
It basically is, at least. Before we start running out of time, let me just throw out. You listen to 60 speeches from all over the world, various types of things. Couple of questions. Number one, what's the two individuals' responses or thought patterns, given the variety of speakers and locations and probably socioeconomic backgrounds, what's the importance of economics and the affordability of healthcare and caregiving? How important is that in what you learn from these talks and how one takes care of another human being?
Well, I'll go at it a little differently, Rabbi Andrews, which is that one of the things that we learned and see is that caregiving, obviously there are professional caregivers and family caregivers, and for the most part, when we talk about caregiving, people tend to have lots of words to describe caregivers, and Carol Levine, who is one of our really smart policy speakers, makes this point. You know, we use words like overwhelmed and heroic, etc. But one word that is just assumed very often about caregivers is unpaid. So there are a couple of our speakers who address the need for creating ways in which to compensate for caregiving, to support caregiving, to create better pay for people who are caregiving. In one of the most extraordinary interviews that we had, David Goff, who is a psychologist in California who suffered a stroke 15 years ago and was left severely disabled, David said something that I think, you know, brought us to tears, which was that if we lived in a culture that was more woman-centered, we would recognize that caregivers, who are by and large women, are the sheroes of our time. They are the first responders of our time, and they, you know, so they don't get enough respect. There are all sorts of issues when it comes to income. Carol Levine talks about how when, you know, one of the things that she deals with all the time is people want to know if they might be able to get paid for the caregiving that they give. And there are ways in which people can get supplemental, but it is a serious policy issue for us if we're going to deal with all the caregiving that's going to be required. There'll be 70 million people with dementia by 2030. There are now half that number.
Well, we understand that this is an amazingly powerful opportunity for people to come and learn. The Age Without Borders Global Caregiving Summit, January 20th to 26th, accessible by going to awbcaregiving.com. That's awbcaregiving.com, the Age Without Borders Facebook page. And I want to thank Carrie Henley, the founder of Age Without Borders, and Bruce Frankel, the host and managing editor of this amazing project. Thank you very much for giving us your time. This is an amazing product, and I hope that thousands of people take advantage of this, and good luck and continued success with this great idea. So thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Bruce. And thank you all of you. Thank you. And feel better. Seriously. Feel better, guys. I know what you're going through. To all of you, I want to thank you for being part of today's broadcast on Jewish Sacred Aging Radio. These shows will be and are archived as podcasts on both Blog Talk Radio and our website, jewishsacredaging.com. And again, we invite your comments and suggestions to Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com or Jewish Sacred Aging Radio on Facebook. These shows are produced at the studios of Lubetkin Global Media in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, under the supervision of our producer, Steve Lubetkin. Thank you again for listening. We look forward to greeting you again on the next edition of Jewish Sacred Aging Radio here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Richard Address. Thank you, and shalom.